Right now, we're talking about the Cavs with you guys. I did get my taxes done, though, Dustin. It is tax day. Hope everyone got theirs done.
I hate the IRS.
Well, that's one way to put it. They got to get their slice of the pie.
No, they get it. They certainly get it.
Only thing on taxes I got. What are we doing with the middleman? I like the good tax people we have in our listening audience. I don't want people to lose their jobs. But, like, they know how much money we owe. If they didn't know how much money we owe, they wouldn't then ever audit anyone, and then we wouldn't have problems that way, right? Like, They know what we owe. Why don't they just send us the bill? Why are we doing this whole, like, I got to go to a tax guy, then the tax guy's got to tell me what I owe, and then I got to write the checks and then send it to them and then pray that it's close enough to a number that is okay? Why don't we just cut out the middleman here? You send me the amount I owe. I then write the check, and I pay that off, and then we're all good.
When you pay the tax guy, he also has to pay taxes on his income.
Yeah.
They're double dipping.
What are we doing with this middleman nonsense?
They just want us to all be broke.
Well, there's called deductions, and there's called write-offs.
I get it's a way for the rich to get richer, right? Because if you can navigate the systems the right way.
No, everyone's got deductions.
Everyone's got deductions, but not everyone's playing with the same deductions.
Yeah, but I'm saying the IRS doesn't know your deductions.
Then how would they ever audit anyone? Then they'd go back and look at it?
Well, I'm pretty sure they know. I know because I've been through the process. It sucks. I got randomly audited 6 years ago.
Okay. What happened?
It's the worst. No, I had just, they sent me a letter and they wanted all my receipts and stuff. And I provided it with them. And this was during COVID. And they gave me like 8 different officers. They kept changing and changing and changing. And they never got around to my stuff. And then they end up saying, no, we don't accept any of your stuff.
Oh, they just didn't accept any of them?
No. They just hit me with a big bill.
Wouldn't it have been nice if they just kind of sent you a bill and was like, hey, this is what you owe?
Oh, they did.
Okay, shouldn't that have been end of story?
After not accepting any of my documentation.
After being like, no, we don't accept it. Okay.
It's ridiculous.
All right. I don't know. Cut out the middleman.
Don't like the IRS.
Stop trying to figure out if I'm like a moral with my taxes or something like that. Just tell me what I owe. Make this simple on everyone. 216-474-0092. All right, we had Jared Greenberg on at 5:20, and we got into a Cavs discussion with him, as we've been doing all day long, really. And I've been asking you guys at 216-474-0092, were the Cavs wrong in how they approached yesterday? I don't think they were. I think you can be mad at them. I think you can be upset. I think you can call it an embarrassment to the NBA. But I don't think you can be mad at them at the end of the day, because they wanted the Pacers or the Magic, and they got the Pacers or the Magic. The end goal yesterday wasn't to end up as the 2 seed and a 50-win team or whatever it was, like the Knicks were. That was not the end goal. The end goal wasn't to have the fan base wondering, why in the hell are you setting up a series against the 76ers? The end goal was to try to win a first-round playoff matchup, and they got closer to that. Now, I don't think Orlando is an easy out, but they got closer to it. Charles up next. What's up, Charles?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said about, you know, but I just don't understand this fan base. We still want to talk about the Knicks from last year, about what they did to us. We try to get a this came from up top. This came from the Cavs front office to lose. So what's wrong with us, you know, sitting our guys? Milwaukee did the same thing yesterday. That's why they ended up in the 3 seed.
Right.
They didn't want the 2 seed either.
So yeah, it worked out great for Milwaukee.
Yeah, well, it worked out great for us now. If we don't beat the Magic, it doesn't look too good for anybody. I mean, if Mitchell's the man that everybody says he is, he's the one on the hook for this series. He's the best player on the floor, and that's all I got to say.
All right, thank you, Charles. He was the best player on the floor last year, too, and nobody really put that on him, though. He scored 38 in game one, and then the Cavs ended up losing that game, and then it just fell down from there. I mean, it was just done from there. We never really looked at it that way. Like he was the best player on the court, you should have won the game. Usually in the NBA, it's pretty simple. You have the best player on the court, you're going to win that. And I think that might be part of the – and Jared started to get to this at 5:20. The bigger picture conversation I think you have to have is that if you're going to re-sign Donovan, and you're going to make the case to re-sign Donovan, but if you're going to re-sign Donovan, you got to do so with the idea that you can't – you're more likely than not are not going to be able to win an NBA title with Donovan Mitchell as the best player on your team.
I don't know about that. The problem is the guy can't really stay healthy, and we don't know what he's going to be in the playoffs. And I don't think it's fair to judge him on his past playoff appearances and assume that's going to be the case going forward, because players evolve. Players get better. I mean, you could have said that about LeBron many, many years ago. Not that Donovan's LeBron, but I mean, I think Donovan can be a centerpiece on a championship caliber team.
Do you think he can be the number one? Because he's 26
and
has never
made it out. I just said centerpiece. That'd be the number one.
Okay. I guess I just see it differently. I feel like we were living with that idea, but I think we were also living with the handoff idea, right? Where Mobley was going to overtake Donovan, and Donovan would have been a really good number two. I think that's why he's rumored to teams like Philadelphia, where he'd be the number two, or like Miami, where you'd be alongside playoff Jimmy, and he'd be the number two. I mean, Donovan, realistically, Dustin, is what? Like the 15th best player in the NBA? If you're going to put him around 15 or so, I would tell you there's a lot of other teams with much better players as their number one. You need a collection of talent. I think that's what the Cavs tried to assemble. They tried to have this collection of talent, and I can't fault them for it. You have four guys that I believe are top 60 players in the NBA. It was a collection. It was a good group. It's very similar to, on a lesser level, what the Pistons did in 04, right? Where you just have a bunch of really good players and no true standouts. But Donovan started to be the standout, and listen, last year he was all NBA. Last year he was fitting the bill. Took a step back this year in a lot of different areas. And really over the past month and a half, took a big step back. And you might say it's because of injuries, but right now that's what we're living with. And I'm not saying you just throw him out and are done with Donovan. I just thought it was interesting that Jared was going down a road that not many Cavs fans have even considered, with the idea that maybe you don't win with Donovan as the alpha on this team. Maybe you have to find another way to do it. And if that means you trade Donovan and get a bunch of pieces, and then you trade somebody else and get a bunch of pieces, and you build this around Jared Allen, and you get this thing going. Jared Allen and Darius Garland was what he suggested. It's an outside-the-box thought, but maybe we need to be thinking outside the box. I know it won't feel good to Cavs fans because it'll feel like a massive step backwards, though. And that's the part that a lot of Cavs fans won't be able to live with, but it's not like we're taking a million steps forward right now when we're playing with the idea that when we have Jared on, he laughs us off the air when you ask whether or not we're dead in the water taking on Boston. He legitimately laughed. Like, as if that was like, as if you're like at the Ha-Ha Hut on Tuesday. As if you're Jerry Seinfeld trying to tell him jokes. Like, he laughed at your question because he thought it was so absurd. And that's where we're at, though. Like, we are so far away from the top of the East that NBA, respected NBA people, when you ask them how far away we are, don't even want to answer the question with the serious answer. They would rather laugh and say, why are you kidding yourself? Why are you thinking I'm going to answer that seriously? That's a big problem. And when that's your answer, I think you live with the idea that maybe you can shake it up, maybe even more than we initially had given us credit for. You know, maybe you do have to think way outside the box, and you have to take some big-time swings. And I think a lot of that comes down to the idea that everything from whether or not you actually do offer Donovan the extension, I think has to be on the table. Can you win with Donovan as a number one? I don't know that you can, and I don't think it's an accident that every trade scenario that is accompanied with Donovan Mitchell has him being the number two, not the number one. 216-474-0092. All right, more from yesterday and what was just a wild day across the NBA and a wild day that the Cavs were at the centerpiece of. Tim Bontemps, the Hoops Collective, talked about how he thought the Cavs were playing scared with what happened yesterday.
They've shouted from the rooftops that their team isn't good enough. Today, there's all this discussion. Oh, we have to reward winning. It's too bad that the Knicks are playing the Sixers potentially in the first round. Or you could just say the Knicks are not afraid because they've spent the last 4 months telling everybody with their play on the court, they believe they're a championship level team. And they acted like a championship level team today. And the Cavaliers acted like a scared team that is just hoping it can win a first round series. And if now they're going into a series with Orlando, a big physical team that could beat them up inside, just like the Knicks did last year.
I mean, if you're asking me to spot the why, I can't really spot the why. Yes, yesterday they managed the team in a scared way. I think it was smart, but I will agree, and I will concede, it was scared. They don't want to be a five-game loser to the 76ers. Because if that happens, there's a bunch of changes that are happening, and a lot of them revolve around people that right now not a lot of people are discussing about, including Kobe Altman. And I think sometimes we forget this as sports fans. It's not necessarily what's in the best interest of us watching these games, and it's not necessarily what's in the best interest of what our Sunday is at 3 o'clock. This is Kobe Altman's job. This is his livelihood. This is his career that is all on the line. If it doesn't work out here, Kobe Altman will be talking to you on an ESPN set a year from now, okay? And he'll be fishing and hoping that somebody gives him another opportunity a couple years down the line. Might even turn into a broadcaster, I don't know. But like that's what's on the line for Kobe Altman. So he doesn't care about your game 82 and whether or not you paid tickets to enjoy yourself. He doesn't care. He wants a playoff series win because that is much easier to sell to the fan base that you've actually grown year over year than saying, oh, we played hard and we really asked the 76ers to come get us. Well, congratulations. You got bounced in five games. You feel like a big tough guy then? You know what I mean? All these people, they want the Cavs to be so competitive and be such big, bad, tough guys. You feel like a tough guy? You stand up to the bully and the bully socks you in the nose and absolutely just beat you up? You feel good about yourself?
You'll get there one day.
Yeah, thank you, Daryl. At least I stood up to the bully is what you'd say. It's like, no, who cares? You got a bloody nose and a black eye. You didn't win that battle. He pulverized you. You didn't win. There's no pride there. You got destroyed. He de-pantsed you in front of your classmates. What are you doing? You look like an idiot. And that's what'll happen to the Cavs.
Yeah, all these references.
That's what'll happen to the Cavs, though. They'll just get destroyed by the 76ers, and no one will come back around and be like, well, thank goodness they stood up to the bad guy. Good for them for not running scared. Who cares? There's no bonus points there. Doesn't work that way. Larry up next. What's up, Larry?
Hey, guys. Thanks for all you told me. I'd like to say, man, the Cavs are there. They just got confidence, man. They got to switch that lineup up. And most of all, man, they got to get hot. They can't get flat. They've been flat for like a month. That's why you're criticizing and nobody is putting up numbers. The forward, man, I would have kept marketing. If they went in that trade, I would have kept him because he can hit. The man know how to win, and also, too, he was learning the system, man. But most of all, run the team you got. If I was a coach, man, all in, everybody playing. I'm switch that lineup up, and everybody going to be rough. Because you got to, man. You can't let one guard beat you. The Knicks, man, they got one player that's beating the whole team. That's unexcusable. I'm professional, man. We got to get ready, man. And they got the team to do it.
I think they got the team to do it too, Larry. I think they got, and thank you, I do appreciate you. They got a team to beat Orlando. And then Jared Greenberger will laugh us off about a question about the Celtics because that's the reality of today's NBA.
He's like, no chance.
Yeah, I know. Aldo, I missed you earlier. I got you now. What's up, man?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. First and foremost, I watch every single Cavs game. And I take offense when people saying that they were playing scared. There was nothing different from yesterday to any other last game of the season. Most teams rest their stars, and I have no problem with that. They want to make sure they go into the playoffs healthy. Mm-hmm. The other point, Donovan, he should be the main piece. There should be no talk about trading him. The talk should be how can we keep him. He's a 6'2 version of LeBron James. If you look at his game, he can do just about everything LeBron can do at a 6'2 level. The third one, as much as put Mobley into being the next Durant or being the next Giannis, so far all I can see is Channing Frye. So that's probably not going to happen.
That's not good. All right. Thank you, Otto. I appreciate you, man, as always. That's not good. Chad's up next. What's up, Chad?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to say, how stupid does Kobe Altman really think we are? When we made this Donovan Mitchell trade, if we would have told you 2 years ago that we'd been one playoff series in 2 years, is that enough to save jobs? If we're being honest, no. Last year was the year to win one round. He rolled the dice and didn't fire JB at the end of last year when he should have. Now, don't sell me on progress. Don't live in your fears. We're going to lose to Boston first round, and it's just not enough. He had 2 years to add to this team. This is the third year in a row where we faded down the stretch, and he cares way too much about everybody getting along and making the changes. As far as trading Garland, let's not do that yet. Let's get a competent head coach in here. Let's see if they can unlock something. We can always move him at the deadline if we need to. But this is the most incompetent front office in Cleveland. They needed to be treated like it, and everybody needs to go unless they make the Eastern Conference Finals.
All right. Thank you, Chad. I appreciate you. And, yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be a lot of the conversations we have over the next couple weeks. I don't think one postseason series win is enough for a lot of you fans, and I understand that completely. I think Kobe Altman has gotten a lot of passes with a lot of people as well.
Listen, I'm going to be excited if they win the series, but it's all going to be
It's gonna be a different feeling once you get in that round too.
Yeah, no, listen, yeah. I'll still defend Kobe. I want to make that clear. I defend the idea that I would have traded for Donovan Mitchell, and I defend a lot of his actions that he has made. I do think he's good at this job. I don't think he's bad at it. But I also understand you have to win, and we do have to hold you accountable. And so that just comes with the territory. That's like what Jared Greenberg had to say about JB Bickerstaff earlier today too. He's like, yeah, listen, I like JB. He defends JB. He's like, but also there does come a point where you have to win. I say this about Kevin Stefanski all the time. Kevin Stefanski, I think, is a good head coach. But at some point, I have to look up, and after 5 years, you have to have more than one playoff win, because it's just not how it works in the NFL. You just don't get to keep your job after 5 years and one playoff win. You have to win more than that. You can talk about all the good will that you built up with the fan base and all the correct moves that you made, but ultimately, you do have to win games.
Let's score more points than the other team.
That's right, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Been a half decade after this season. You need to have more than one playoff win on your resume. All right, let's get to the Masters here.
That's all I did all weekend.
Did you see?
Outside of working the Tennessee spring game and studying and stuff like that, I was watching the Masters.
I mean, your Saturday felt pretty booked. You went. You covered a Tennessee spring game, then you went to the Tennessee baseball game against LSU.
The Masters app, best app in sports.
Yeah. Minus the Odyssey app, you got it.
They're right there. 1A, 1B.
You got it. Scottie Scheffler is at a bar in Dallas, Texas
right now.
Saw
that just now.
He's got the green jacket on. I don't understand why they do that with the green jacket. You can only take the green jacket away for a year. You get it for 1 year. And then when you come back to the Masters next year, they then keep it at Augusta for the rest of your life.
So you wear it when you're there for the dinner and stuff?
It's like, you know how the Stanley Cup trophy makes like the 1 year trip around and everyone gets a chance at it? It's the same thing with the green jacket, essentially, except you get the whole entire year. So Scottie Scheffler can take the green jacket anywhere for a year and that's it. And that's what he's doing. He's at a bar in Dallas. Imagine being in, I don't even know what you, I guess I just call you an alcoholic. If you're at a bar on Monday morning, you either got off of a late night overshift or you're probably an alcoholic hanging out at the bar. And then Scottie Scheffler walks in with his green jacket. That is insane.
Pretty awesome. Now, was he just walking in the bar by himself, or was he with buddies?
I don't know. I think this has got to be one of his big deals.
Yeah, it's got to be one of his local watering holes.
Yeah,
right?
Like one of his spots. And I'm sure, I mean, he won the Masters a couple years ago, and he didn't do this a couple years ago, to my best knowledge. So I don't think it's an annual, or not even an annual, I don't think it's a tradition of his. And I also can't say it's a thing that he told himself at 12 years old he was always going to do growing up in Dallas. Like, oh, if I ever win, I'm taking the green jacket, and I'm going here. You know, some people always, like, they win a big thing, and they go to Waffle House. Like, I've always wanted to go to Waffle House with the Stanley Cup, or I've always wanted to go to Waffle House. I think Bubba Watson took the green jacket there 1 year, right? Like, I think he's doing this if this is the second time he won the Masters.
Where would you go? Where would be your first place?
Home. I'm going home.
No, to take it out.
I don't know. I don't.
What would be your first excursion?
Going home. Clear a path.
Right in front of my TV. I'm going to sit there and watch whatever's on a streaming device and whatever sporting event I can, and that's how I'm celebrating the Masters.
Question is, would he have left the bar for his wife going to labor?
I think so. I think so.
I don't know if I'm going to leave half a beer here.
the final round of Augusta, sure.
Yeah. And
so you had a great observation, I thought, because we talked about that one last week. We talked about, like, what do you do in that scenario? And I think me and you both agree that you stay. And you finish out the Masters.
Yes.
Like, you go for what is the greatest accomplishment that you can have in your respective sport, winning the green jacket.
Yeah, I know he's already done it, but it's still, I mean, he's the youngest to ever do it twice, right? This soon, I should say.
Yeah, and so you watched it, and you changed your mind.
Well, I thought that, because I'm not a diehard golf fan. I watch the majors, and I've seen Scotty. But, I mean, I said this to you last week. Scotty Scheffler, I couldn't pick him out of a crowd of one.
Yeah, which is a problem for this.
Yeah, I couldn't. I mean, the guy is the face of golf, I guess, technically. I mean, he's not the face of golf.
I mean, Jim Nance, what was Jim Nance's final call there yesterday? His stardom confirmed.
Yeah.
Is it, though?
I don't know.
Is it? Is it confirmed? Maybe in the golf world. I mean,
I don't know, Jim. More people know you than him.
That's, yes.
100% true.
If Jim Nance is on one side of a shopping mall and Scottie Scheffler is on the other side of the shopping mall, Jim Nance probably
He's
has more people going
in
his direction.
And Scheffler's still trying on shoes.
That's not great news. That's not great news for the Masters. That's not great news for golf in general.
No, it's not. It's not. But I did say to you, you know, I didn't know much about Scotty. Obviously, he's very religious, and he I think he meant it when he said that he was going to leave if she went into labor. And I'm like, I truly believed that if he was on the back nine with a four-stroke lead or whatever it was, he would have walked right off the course and just DQ'd.
Yeah, you watched a lot of him this weekend. You got to see his demeanor. You got to see his mentality.
There was no demeanor.
Exactly right. And that's why he gives off the impression of someone that's going to sell you software. He's a software sales guy.
He reminds me, I got a buddy. They look just like each other. Their mannerisms, the way, my buddy's a golfer too, and they, I mean, the way he wears his hat so low, it's kind of hard to see his face a little bit too.
He seems like a nice guy.
No, I have no problem with him. I'm sure he's a fantastic guy.
He seems like me, and that's a problem. He seems like someone that's 34 years old or should be 34. He's like 24, but
nah,
he should be 34.
You're
with
way
like
more outgoing than him.
Well, I'm more outgoing. He doesn't have, I mean, he's just not outgoing at all.
And
he's
it's not
quiet.
To be judgmental. It's just like if you're that good and you don't have some sort of personality, it's tough for people to get behind you. And I don't think he cares. I mean, he would make so much more money if he were like Brooks Koepka and played the villain role or something like that. You know, I just, not that it matters. I mean, the guy's made $12 million on the course in the last like 6 weeks.
Well, and so I guess I'm wondering, and I think there's a couple things that a lot of people aren't recognizing with Scottie Scheffler. And there's something I learned last night even that I didn't 100%. Hey, I love golf, and I can talk about his 9 wins. I can talk about his 2 Masters. I can talk about everything he's accomplished. But did you realize he's never won a professional tournament past the date of this most recent Masters that he won, April 14th? So, like, we're entering the Scottie Scheffler era, quote-unquote. We're entering this era.
You're saying in terms of the season, he's good early?
He's been the number one golfer for 80 straight weeks, number one in the world for 80 straight weeks, which means it was the entire last year calendar that he was the number one golfer. He's never won a tournament past April 14th in the calendar day. So, like, historically, from this moment on, he just doesn't win. All his wins, February, March, March, April, February, March, 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 April. How do you have the most dominant? There's so many things that are interesting about him. He's not a very good putter, which is weird. There's so many things that don't add up.
Was working yesterday. He typically is not a great putter.
Well, that's when he dominates fields, is when he gets any semblance of being a decent putter. It's just not even close because he's by far the best with the driver. Yeah, Rory's the best with the driver, but accuracy, everything
he's
thrown in the mix.
Darts.
Irons, it's not even close. I mean,
his hands around the green are fantastic.
Tee to green, he is as good as you're going to find. Maybe arguably in the history of the game, he just can't putt. He can't putt to save his life. It's so weird.
You should borrow Morikawa's putter. Who didn't he bust out like an old one on Friday?
Putters. He changed putters
on Friday.
Between rounds.
I know.
It's almost like Happy Gilmore. We need to get him like a
hockey puck.
The
hockey made puck. By Odyssey.
Yeah, or some practice at putt-putt courses or something. I'm not entirely sure. We need to figure something out for him.
Could you actually use the Happy Gilmore putter?
They sold one.
I know. I think you can find.
I don't know that it's like USGA certified, but
that's what I'm saying. I mean, it's if you found one, it's like a replica or whatever. Could you use it?
If you used it at like your club, I don't think anybody's saying anything except like, hey, that's kind of cool. Can I try it?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm not a good hockey player, so I don't think I would be a
you
very good.
Played hockey.
No, that's why I'm not a good hockey player.
Okay. I know you're not a good at it.
I know I'm not good at it.
You've never done it.
Yeah, exactly right. A lot of hockey guys are actually low-key pretty good at golf.
Yeah, well, dude.
They're good at everything, though.
If you're a professional athlete in anything, you're probably going to be halfway decent at golf because you're athletic.
Yeah, but the swing for the hockey is supposedly it's very similar to golf in a lot of the respects of like the bottom part of it, I guess.
Yeah, I just saw a couple
of they build up a lot of swing speed, and they're just good at it.
I saw a couple of videos of some of the top tennis players. Like Rafa Nadal's like a scratch golfer.
Yeah, I believe it.
And he has his swing is very, very awkward.
I mean, you're a world-class athlete. What happened?
I don't golf enough. I could probably drop 10 strokes off my handicap if I actually played.
Are you great at every sport, though?
Am I great?
Yeah, I mean, again, you're a world-class athlete.
Yeah. No, I'm not great at every sport.
Some people are just anything with a ball they're good at. Like anything
pretty,
with a ball,
I'm
puck,
pretty,
whatever it is, they're just good
pretty
at.
Pretty good at most sports.
Yeah. I would think so.
Yeah.
We have an advantage in a lot of areas. Anything that involves
speed,
anything
that
involves jumping.
At this point, until I get into my like 60s and 70s, I'm still going to be a better athlete on like the tennis court or on the golf course.
Yeah.